Previously on the Tony Kornheiser Show.
No, it is a legitimate worry that there's this whole fear that if Putin gets backed into the corner, that he has, well, if I can't have it, nobody can have it mindset, right?
Yeah. That feeling.
You know, it seems as if the longer this war's going on, then the longer he hasn't resorted to tactics like that, the more confident that folks are that he's at least rational enough.
And he won't do that. All right. Yeah. I'll get you out of here on this. Shohei Ohtani, huh? What do you think?
Tim or Dominic Smith, who would you rather? It's close, right?
The Tony Kornheiser Show is on now.
Yes, let's take the most serious topic that scares all of us and then just go to Shohei Ohtani. That's what the show is. Jeannie is here today. I'm very happy that Jeannie is here today. And I have some stories that I need Jeannie's comments on. First of all, the show at large, and I know Michael joins in this, as does Steve Sands join in this, our great congratulations to John O'Donnell, Johnny O., who has made the clothing that both Michael and I and all of Michael's children wear all the time.
Best dressed kids in kindergarten.
He made the U.S. Senior Open.
Had a birdie in round one.
Did he?
Yeah.
Okay. And I watched a little bit last night, and all they were showing was pros last night. All they were showing were senior tour guys when I was watching, like Steve Stricker was on for hours. It's in Wisconsin, which is Stricker's
Century
home
World.
State. You know, what did Johnny finish?
He finished with an 80, and he looked like he struggled to finish both nines. I don't know where he started. But again, as he would say, because the USJ app is giving a lot of coverage to those types of stories, he is a career am, and he describes himself as a shirt salesman.
Yes.
I mean, he might be able to pick up a couple players.
Yeah.
He looked good. I got that polo shirt, the one with the buttons on the collar.
Yeah.
I have that.
Yeah. So, you know, come on. So we're really happy for him. He's a wonderful golfer. And
yes.
To make the senior am is so
sure, hard. But to play in any USJ event at any level and to continue to put yourself through the qualifying process at that age is unbelievable.
Just great. There was a perfect game. I could talk about it, but no one cares. I did watch the NHL draft for about an hour, and I was very surprised at this one thing. I thought it was a pretty good television show. The kids who are drafted are so young.
They're
looking.
So young.
They actually are 17 and 18, and they actually look,
they look
17 and 18, and they are so young looking. And unlike the NBA draft, at the NBA draft, you declare for the NBA draft, it is because you want to play in the NBA. Like, you don't want to even wait till next season. You want to play in the NBA tonight if you can.
So is this more like a baseball draft where you go through the process?
Yes, people, they would say that certain players were committed to Boston College next year.
Quinnipiac.
Boston University next year. So, and you go, well, what are you doing in the draft? Why are you in the draft? You're so happy. You walk down there, you put on the jersey, you shake everybody's hand, you look great, and then you're not going to actually play. The Russian kid who was drafted has a 3-year contract with the KHL in Russia, who the Philadelphia Flyers drafted. People said of him, he may actually be as good, if not better, than Connor Bedard, who was the unanimous choice for number one. But what you're going to have to do, you're going to have to buy him out of his deal. And we're not as friendly with Russia as we used to be.
No.
It's going to be hard to buy. But the kid was here, and he put on a Flyers jersey. And then you hear the backstory that, well, it was a 3-year contract. You know, that's very weird to me.
We may never see him again.
No, it's very weird to me because I'm so used to with the football draft.
Oh, yeah.
The football draft.
You're out there the next
year. You're ready
year.
To go.
Yes.
Right. You're so happy to be drafted.
Yeah.
And the basketball draft, you would have put your name in when you were 14 if they allowed it. Nobody goes anywhere else. So that was weird. But those are not my stories. I have two stories. The first story, I'll do the dog story first. So yesterday was Thursday. So on Wednesday, the guys from Pineapple come over, Pineapple Landscaping, they come over and they do some stuff in the backyard. They don't cut because it had been cut a couple of days before. They're doing
a cleanup.
Cleanup and pretty work. You know, they're making everything nice. That's fine. Yeah, it's nice.
Sure.
And then the next morning, you know, I leave, Chessie has Frisbees. And we leave them outside. So she goes outside, puts them in her mouth, prances around, and does whatever dogs do. That's where the Frisbees are. And some of them, the cloth ones, are really ratty. I mean, she's eaten them. She's ripped them up. They're no good.
Reset, these are the Frisbees that listeners emailed us about probably 6 months ago. And we went on Amazon and
we still have the Kong one that's rubber. Yeah, that she can't
These
eat.
Are supposedly indestructible.
We don't want her to have the plastic ones because although a lot of dogs learn things, like Chessie learns, she learned that if she does a certain thing, I will give her a biscuit. She's learned that. But she hasn't learned not to eat the plastic Frisbee and throw up. She continues to throw up
when
she eats the plastic Frisbee. So we tried to get her off plastic Frisbee.
Which says on the packaging, not a chew toy.
Right. So I go outside. Yeah, I put her outside yesterday morning and there are no Frisbees. And I say, and she's learned this sentence too, where are they? Where are they means you run around the yard and you find them and you bring them. And she doesn't find them. And I walk around and I don't find them. Now, I don't look everywhere, but I look a lot of places and I don't find them. So I call Alex, who runs, it's his company. I mean, Finn, his dad, is great, but Finn works for Alex. Alex is the man, right, Michael? Fair to say.
Yeah.
Alex is the man. And I call Alex. I say, I don't want to be an alarmist, but you guys were over here the other day, and the Frisbees look sort of ratty, and maybe, just maybe they tossed them. You know, maybe they tossed them. And I left that in a message. He calls me right back 10 minutes later, and he says, what's up? And I said, well, did you? He said, no, I didn't listen to the message. So I repeat it, and he goes, oh, no, we can't have that. So he calls the crew, and he says, that's Gabriel's crew. And three guys come over, and Gabriel comes over with these other two guys who I recognized from the day before. And they start looking through the brush, and they find the Frisbees. Now they take pictures of the Frisbees. They want to take pictures of the Frisbees. Now I go over to them, and I use my only three words of Spanish. Lo siento mucho.
Yeah.
Because I am terribly sorry. I should have looked here. This is my fault. I am so sorry. I am really sorry. And they just, you know, waved. And then they said, call Alex. And I said, I will call Alex right now. So I called Alex and I said, they hate me. I understand it. I'm terribly sorry. What can I do?
Think of all the things they've been accused of taking.
Well, I didn't accuse them of taking them.
No, but not you. But I mean, why they're so
right.
sensitive
and
to
and so
it.
I could,
where's my trowel?
I could not be more guilty.
Yes.
I could not be more apologetic. I feel this.
Right.
I felt so bad. Next thing I know, there's a knock on the door, and Alex brings over a bunch of toys for the dog.
Aww.
He went out and bought toys for the dog, one of which is a big sort of cotton ball that makes noise that she's going to be through by tomorrow afternoon.
But she loves that.
And I said, you didn't have to do this. He said, no, I thought we had to. And I said, I am so terribly, you know what I mean?
Oh, it sort of makes me sad that people think you wield this incredible power over them, that they're all just quivering.
They shouldn't.
Yes, but they do.
But I probably shouldn't have called, but I just wondered if they threw them out.
Yeah.
You know, because they're really ratty. They're really bad.
Yeah, I mean, I could see that rationalization of being like, oh, yeah, these must be garbage. We'll toss these, you know, not of any malice or
so
anything.
So I
like
feel
that.
Awful, but like Alex brought, isn't that nice?
That's just wonderful.
Yes, it's very nice.
You're mad at me.
Well, I'm not mad at you. I just regret that this situation occurs, that people quake in your presence.
Then you're going to love this next story.
Okay, bring it on.
I went to a bank the other day.
Walked
I don't know that I should say the name of the bank. Michael knows this story. I don't know that I should say the name of the bank. But I went to a bank, not my bank. A convenient bank, not my bank.
Here's trouble.
My bank is Truist, and I don't even know. Yeah, I wasn't in the area where the Truist was. I went to a bank. I had a $100 bill. I wanted to get change of $100 because I needed to buy some things. Or actually, I needed to... Danny was coming over, and I needed to make sure Danny had money for the hair. Okay? I needed to do that. Needed $100. Wanted 4 20s, a 10, and 2 5s. And felt, I'm going to go to a bank, because this is an exchange of money. I'm not asking for anything. I'm giving you. You have money. This is a bank. I'm giving you $100 and asking you to give me back $100 in another denomination. Does that sound unreasonable to you?
No.
Okay. As I walk into the bank, there are two tellers. One is dealing with a customer who is a young man, probably in his 20s or early 30s, who has with him a beautiful brown dog on a leash. The dog is in the bank. Actually, she's laying on her back at that point. And she's in the bank with this guy. He's with one teller. I look at the teller to my left, who was unoccupied. And I said, I take out a $100 bill. I said, I'd like to get some change. She goes, are you, do you have an account with us? I go, no. No. She says, well, we can't do it.
I'm sorry.
What do you mean you can't do it? I'm not asking you to give me any. I'm giving you $100. We're just trading. We're just trading here. No, I can't do it. I can't do it. I'm at a loss for words, and I back away, and I go, this is insane. What? The guy looks at me, and the guy says, you need change of 100? I'll give you change of 100. I go, really? He says, yeah. He proceeds to take out of his pockets giant gobs of bills. Giant gobs. They make the Phil Mickelson gob of cash that he always carried around look
Neil
like
Neil Diamond buying a house?
Giant gobs of bills. And when I say giant gobs, I mean fistful after fistful.
Are they organized or are they just kind of like crumpled up?
They're sort of crumpled up.
Oh, boy.
And I say to him, which I think anybody would say at that point, what are you doing with all this money? And he says to me, I'm a stripper.
Oh, wow.
Magic Mike.
Of course.
I'm a stripper. And he takes out, he says, how do you want it?
Oh,
and I
my
go, how about
God.
420s? Yeah, how about four? And he says to me, I'll give you 420s. How about a 10, a 5, and 5 ones? I go, that's gold. That's great. And he says, don't be mad at them. You know, they're good. Pointing to the tellers, don't be mad at them. I'm a stripper. And I look at him and I do say, you really are a good looking man. I mean, you know, he was about 5'10".
And then did you try to put some money down?
No, I did say, do you want me to give you back the ones in your belt or however it worked? And what do you make of the dilemma of a bank only dealing with its own customers? This is the United States of America. This is legal tender.
There must be a reason for this policy, probably related to counterfeiting. For some reason, there's been some sort of a scam.
Oh, couldn't they put the 100 under a light, a special light?
I don't know, but I'm sure there's the littles will write in and tell us, those who work in
banks. Michael looked down at me when I didn't look
down at you. I'm just, I never would consider going into any other bank that's not one where I have some relationship, even if it's just, I used to be a member there and the tellers know me. To me, you've never had a debit card. So the idea is when you get your debit card, you used to walk around saying, I have to find the debit card that belongs to my bank, so I'm not paying the transaction fee, where, you know, you look at this and I just don't know why you would expect someone to do that. I just would never walk in there.
No, I share your expectation.
You're older. We come from an America where this is exactly what you did. You walked into a bank.
And that's where I see, where is the divide? Because for that exact scenario, I would walk into a convenience store, a corner shop, and I would buy something.
I'm not buying anything. I mean, I want change of 100.
You're asking for a service.
I'm technically asking for a service, but I'm not. There's no purchase involved. There's nobody's beating anybody. I mean, you're with me on this one.
I'm with you, but I would not take it out on the tellers, as the stripper advised. I'm in the same league with him,
right?
On that occasion, because I'm sure there is a reason for that. We don't know what it is. It might be something that they don't want people to know because it's a scam that is easily.
Ongoing, yeah. right. Mm-hmm. A stripper. Gobs of money. Unbelievable.
How was he dressed? Was it like casual?
He was dressed, yeah.
Like a fireman?
Huh? No. No.
He had on
I would call a sort of probably trendy, probably sort of, I mean, if I had to say a name, like Lululemon, even though I don't know what that means.
Athleisure.
Yeah, a sort of a sweatsuit, black sweatsuit with white piping. It was nice looking. He was great looking. He could have just come from his job. This was in the morning. He could have been out all night being a stripper.
Right. But bachelorettes.
It was.
It is the wedding season.
That's right.
Well, he could have been there, or he could have been anywhere being a stripper.
Yes.
You know, he could have been anywhere.
Yes.
But the amount of money he had, the amount of cash, and he's not declaring any of this money.
Oh, no.
No. I mean, just, you know, gobs and gobs and gobs of money.
And
he was so nice.
Without question, just ask, where'd you get all that money from?
Well, wouldn't you have?
Yes, I would.
Of course.
I would say.
I would never ask, but I'd wonder about it all day and go through every possibility with my wife at home.
I'm an old man. Yes. I get to ask that.
I would say, if you don't mind my asking.
Oh, I didn't.
Where did you get all this freaking cash?
Yes.
Yeah.
It's an awful lot of cash. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now.
Big gobs.
Is there a resolution? Are you going to buy the bank and have the tellers fired?
No, no, but. It is discouraging to me to think that, and this happens, there's a lot of things that there is an entry portal to a given thing that you have to be a member of. And, you know, that's discouraging to me. There's a lot of that, and we could go through all the things that exist like that.
Well, it's reminiscent of when you went to the post office and wanted to pay with legal cash.
And they wouldn't take my money.
Right. Take it. And that to me... Yeah,
they wouldn't take my money. You're the post office. You are the government. Right. You print this money and you won't take this money. And I have problems with the
any cashless
food
payment?
Stores. Yeah, I have problems
parking
with
garages. Well,
they don't want to get robbed, okay?
Or is it they want to fire their help?
Oh, well, that could be that, too. But, I mean, how vulnerable, for example, is your average post office to some guy walking in? Suppose all the transactions
were cash. I guess. Because I don't rob people. Because I don't think that way. So
you have to watch Law & Order more. And, British crime dramas. And
do you get BritBox?
Oh, I love BritBox. Yes.
But for all those cashless payment options, you think about all the service charges that we never know we're paying that are from the service having to pay that junk fee. I'm very interested in your reasoning that the bank might be afraid of counterfeit bills and or just the process of somebody taking in dirty money and just cleaning it through, getting the change from the bank, and the bank trying to maybe avoid being involved in any of that.
Breaking Bad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you think the bank looked at me as a potential felon?
Yeah, no, why not?
Okay.
Hey, I've got one for you. Talk about cashless deals. So my sister was having a procedure in a medical building. I had to be there to pick her up. That medical building across from Saks Fifth Avenue in Wisconsin, 5530, which is the hub of every doctor that we know.
Avoid the right lane.
So I went and parked myself in the Saks Fifth Avenue parking lot across the street, so I don't have to go into that horrible underground garage. No more toll booths, no more little men in the kiosks. You drive in. It is now ruled by Air Garage. You pull up any parking space you want. You text to a number, and the text message you send is pay. Immediately comes a message back to you saying, hello, welcome to Air Garage. You type in your license plate number. You type in, I think...
This is a lot of work to park.
It's easy.
Really?
It's easy. 40 seconds, done. Oh, I have to give my credit card, of course.
Well, of course.
But, yeah. But...
don't forget the expiration date.
Yeah. No more... toll booth operators.
I like
and parking
toll booth
lots.
Operators.
Do you feel like you ended up paying more because of all the fees that are in the transaction?
It was by the minute.
Do you have the Park Mobile app?
Yes.
Minute by minute. Doobie Brothers. I don't have any of those. I don't want apps. I don't even want my phone.
phone.
Yeah. I am.
Just for the call.
I'm lost in this world. We'll take a break when we come back. Is it Barry or is it Ann?
Barry.
Barry's Verluga today. We need to talk about the investments that Qatar is attempting to make into the Washington, D.C. professional sports scene. I'm Tony Kornheiser.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
You're listening to The Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is a band called Divine Sweater. This is a song called When the World is Ending. Divine Sweater has an album, I guess, Divine Sweater. They're playing tonight at Comet Ping Pong. Wow.
How about that?
On Connecticut Avenue. I guess it's open again. I guess we're not.
Don't bring that up.
All right. Comet Ping Pong, Washington, D.C., before a hometown show at the Sinclair on July 8th in Cambridge, Massachusetts. This is sent to us by Cameron Tabutabai, who says, I was lucky enough to chat about you and the pod with Brian Windhorst during the most recent NBA postseason. I told Brian I admired his ability to produce a good segment despite your utter disdain for the NBA. He rejected the notion, suggesting instead the games are usually just on too late. All the same, if the title of official Celtics beat writer for the Tony Cornizer podcast hasn't been taken, I humbly volunteer. We'll check you out with Bob Ryan. We'll find out if we can do that.
Right.
Again, this is Alex Goldberg is on the band. His band is Divine Sweater, and it was called When the World is Ending. Plays in Barry's Verluga, and we need to talk about this. We need to talk about a couple of things in Washington, D.C. with teams. Let me just ask, first of all, if you expect Josh Harris now to buy the football team and you actually expect Dan Snyder to sell the football team?
I do. I mean, now that it's been vetted by the NFL Finance Committee and there's a date set of July 20th for a vote of all the ownership, I mean, they don't set up these votes if they don't know the answer. They're not a vote to be rejected. Tony, I am with you in the kind of skepticism of your question. I have been not until the ink dries will I believe this transaction.
Yep.
But we're a month, 3 weeks from the ink being dry, and I think the path is there. And it's just, you know, if you think about it, it's kind of startling in how abrupt this has happened, because even with the maelstrom around Snyder for several years, kind of leading into 2020 when the Post reporting on everything bad that had happened in Ashburn came out, he didn't announce his intentions to explore a sale until November. That was kind of a shocking development. This still will feel startling and have real ramifications in this town.
Okay, but you expect it. I'm one of those holdouts who thinks that Snyder has not said a single word about this publicly. He's going to say, nah, I'm going to keep the team.
His house in Potomac is for sale.
That is, mm-hmm. Right. I'm moving to England, right?
Mm-hmm.
Living on a boat in England.
You can do a video tour of it.
Thanks for sending him over to us. We appreciate that.
Yeah. Okay, second question. Do you expect the Lerner family to keep going through the process of selling the Nats? Do you see any change there?
That is so murky, and I'll be honest with you, very frustrating. I do think the fact that the one remaining bidder, who is Ted Leonsis, mm-hmm. the owner of Monumental Sports, Capitals, Wizards, Mystics, the fact that he took on new money in his Monumental Sports group from the bottomless pit of Qatari Investment Fund.
We're going to get right to that.
Yep.
Go ahead.
Yeah, that sets him up financially to make a strong bid for the Nationals. He clearly wants a sports empire here,
yep.
Larger than he does, that he already has. And remember, him buying the Nationals isn't just, person A buying a baseball team. That sale and the finances behind it have to be vetted by not just Major League Baseball, but by the NBA and the NHL, because it's that group that will be overseeing the new baseball team. So it's a more complicated process, but I can't tell you, Tony, what the Lerners feel in their hearts about are we in or are we out. I thought for sure when they made their announcement in April 2022 that they were 100% out. Since then, the patriarch Ted Lerner has died. It's hard to know exactly who the lead vote is and what their feelings are, so that one's harder to answer.
Well, the reason Ted Leonsis, I've worked in television long enough to know this. The reason Ted Leonsis wants to buy that team is inventory. If you've got a hockey team, if you've got a basketball team, if you've got a baseball team, and your primary source of income becomes a regional sports network, you are golden 365 days a year.
Mm-hmm.
You got something on every one of those days. Baseball it shovels coal into the fire all the time, right? You would agree with that. I mean, he's owning these teams in order to feed the network, yes?
I 1,000% agree with you, and he's rebranded that network, and he's poised to do that. There are complicating factors in the fact that buying the baseball team, buying this baseball team, does not come with the rights currently for those broadcasts. So the Orioles still control Mid-Atlantic Sports Network. They control the rights to the Nationals, and he would have to work out a deal to get those rights back. So it's well, what you say makes complete sense. It's not just an easy transfer, and all of a sudden he has those 162 baseball games. He's got to do a deal on top of the deal to make that work.
And I'm sure he understands that, and it may be that the time is right to do that because the courts seem to be siding against the Orioles so far in this whole Masson thing, and maybe they want to get out, especially because their team is better now, and they probably would make some money. But I'll leave that to the side for a second. The money that he is taking on, Ted Leonsis is taking on money from the sovereign state of Qatar, okay, which is, to me, troubling. To me, troubling. It may not be troubling to other people. It's never troubling to Wilbon. Wilbon had no problem at all with the Saudi Arabia money that now the Saudi Arabians own the golf tour. They own it. And if anybody thinks that's not true is really not paying attention. This is another sovereign country outside of our purview, and it's different, Barry, I would suggest, and you will tell me, it's different than a Qatari citizen buying 15% in a stake or something. This is the government doing this. And so you are then allowed to look at the government and how it conducts itself and make a determination whether or not this is good. What are your thoughts on this?
Well, I mean, Tony, I can't sit here as someone who has criticized the source of the LIV Golf funding since before LIV Golf was announced and say, oh, I don't care about Ted Leonsis taking money from the state of Qatar, which has a similar, if not exactly the same record on human rights abuses as does the Saudi Arabian government. I mean, that would be hypocritical. And so, yes, troubling is a good word for it. That regime has a horrible record on gay rights in particular, on female rights. So you have to, Ted Leonsis has not explained his thinking, has not, they made an announcement. He has not taken questions on what the involvement is going to be here. But if we're not looking at it askance, we're not doing the right thing for sure.
Yeah. So I know that the comeback is, well, the United States government's hands are not clean. We have business relationships with a lot of countries that are oppressive and autocratic. China and Russia come to the top of the list and probably more dangerous to us than maybe Qatar is, maybe Saudi Arabia. I'm not sure about that. But when the United States Senate gets involved in the golf, boy, I don't think golf is as important to this country as baseball. I don't think golf is as important to this country as basketball, maybe as hockey, but I'm not even certain of that anymore. I'm not certain of that. Do you expect the government to get involved with this? And Ted Leonsis can say, I'm not taking any questions from you. Well, I don't think he can say, I'm not taking any questions from the government, right?
No, that's an interesting one for sure. And I think the counter here, you hit on the Saudis owning professional golf, which is accurate. I think the counter, and if I'm just going to sit in Leonsis' seat for a second, is the rules are that this investment in Monumental, rules set by the NBA and the NHL, is that they can't own more than a certain percentage, and I'm not sure of the certain percentage.
I mean, it's 15.
So they have to be silent partners. Now, I'm suspicious of silence. I mean, what are they're just going to put the money in and then turn their backs and not watch the games and have any sort of opinion on what the product is and how their money's being used? I mean, that seems ridiculous. Yes, is it reasonable to assume that some Congress people might have an interest in how this money is going to be used? Absolutely. And I'm not even saying that Ted is dodging questions on this. I mean, I think he'll answer them, and he will. His answer, I suspect, will be involving people, involving these regimes in our economy and our society will serve to push them forward rather than isolating them and allowing them to continue their misdeeds, that they will have to conform if they want to get more involved in the economy. You can debate that. I'm just pretty certain that that's what his answer will be.
There was a period of time where leagues didn't, I think football still does this, but I could be wrong. They didn't let you own teams from different sports. You owned that's a team right. in that sport. That's how it worked, right?
Well, I mean, if you look at Stan Kroenke, he owns, you know, the Denver professional teams, essentially, except for the Rockies and the L.A. Rams. So there's right. crossover. John Henry owns the Boston Red Sox and a big stake of the Pittsburgh Penguins. Right. This is becoming more common. And it's becoming more common because there are fewer candidates. These franchises, their values are so exorbitant that, you know, the Rooney family can't just walk in and buy an NFL franchise anymore. It takes
That's right.
these gigantic heavy hitters who, if it, the price is $6 billion for the Washington Commanders, it doesn't really matter because this, the, you know, Josh Harris has made so much money that he can own sports, you know, he can own the New Jersey Devils and the Philadelphia 76ers. And it's, I mean, I don't want to say it's a drop in the pocket, but he's equipped to do it. The number of people who can do that is finite and small. And you're going to see, because of that, more investment groups, foreign and domestic, become big yeah. players in these things because it's just so, so expensive.
I think we're going into the deep woods here. I mean, I really do. I think this is the tip. I think that all around the world, countries are going to start to do this. And I think there will be, I'm not saying they will try to take over, but I am saying they're going to try and
well,
take over.
Well, I risk sounding xenophobic, but it just scares me that there's some slippery slope
yeah.
that this whole infrastructure of American sports, especially baseball, is going to be corrupted.
Yeah. What do you think, Barry?
And well, I think what we have to watch, and golf is kind of the canary in the coal mine because they're further along in this process, and the Saudis have a bigger stake in that. You know, the PGA Tour is making all this noise that, oh, no, we run golf, even though we've partnered with the Saudi Public Investment Fund. I mean, that just doesn't ring true. And I think we're going to have to watch as future schedules are announced, like, what events are where? I mean,
I don't
think you're going to have a PGA Tour that has the West Coast swing and the Florida swing and everything that we know. I think that you're going to be like, oh, well, this week's event is in Saudi Arabia. And this, you're going to see many more mainstream Middle Eastern events. And you'll know then that the power has swung. And so then follow that along to Jeannie's fear about, you know, what does become the influence on our domestic sports. And it would be interesting to look at. I don't know enough about the Saudi involvement in the English Premier League, but that is a global brand. They know it. They're involved in it for a reason, and they're not going to be involved just to like stick their money in a shoebox and put it in somewhere in the English countryside. Like, they're going to want say and sway, and we have to watch how that might affect domestic sports.
Totally agreed. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Barry. Thank you, thank you.
Appreciate it, Tony. Thanks very much.
Barry's for Lugo, boys and girls. Ann Hornaday, when we return, I'm Tony Kornheiser.
Knowing how to speak and understand a new language can be an invaluable tool when traveling, meeting new friends, or just even to master a new skill. But it's not always simple when you're bogged down by textbooks and structure classes. That's why so many people trust Rosetta Stone. Rosetta Stone is the most trusted language learning program, available on desktop or as an app. It truly immerses you in the language you want to learn, like Spanish, French, Italian, Chinese, and more. You won't just be studying English translations. The Rosetta Stone intuitive process helps you pick up a language naturally, first with words, then phrases, then sentences. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/rs10. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/rs10 today.
This is the Tony Kornheiser Show.
These are the Ozark Mountain Daredevils. They're real. They are a big hit group.
Yes.
This is sent to us by Dwight Glenn, who writes, greetings from the official 70s country rock band of the TK Show, the Ozark Mountain Daredevils. We're excited to share with you today our new single, More Cowbell. hits the airwaves today. And tomorrow, Saturday, July 1st, they will be debuting the song nationally with an appearance on the Grand Ole Opry.
How about that?
In Nashville. We then will take the highways and byways to Washington, D.C., as we have the distinct honor of being the featured artist for Smithsonian's Ozark Folklife Festival. We'll perform live on the National Mall on July 4th. Isn't that nice? Wow. That's a great honor. I remember when I first got here, the Beach Boys used to do that.
Yes.
You know, it's really lovely. We've been privileged to do cool things during our 51 years as a touring band, but this is definitely a highlight of our career. Lucky for you, we have July 5th as an off day before we head to Michigan and Wisconsin for a couple of shows later in the week. So if you need a fourth at Columbia on the 5th, please let me know. You know. As always, we thank you for the years of smart and thoughtful entertainment for allowing us to share our music with all the littles. Who doesn't need a little more cowbell in their lives? Isn't that lovely? More cowbell. All right. Plays in Ann Hornaday. This is the July 4th weekend. This is traditionally, you know, a big deal movie weekend. Everybody's out of school. Quiet little movies are not usually released at this time. Big noisy movies are released. And the biggest, noisiest one, right, is the Harrison Ford movie, yes?
That would be it, yeah.
Have you seen it?
I have.
Did you like it?
That's a complicated question.
I think it's a complicated answer.
When is it not? You know, it's fine. It's definitely in this category of everything's like way too long. I'm sorry I'm a broken record, but that's just the way it is. Like, these are two hours and 25, two and a half. It's a lot. It's completely, you know, plot narratively, you know, there's very little surprise. But the big draw is Harrison Ford, and, you know, seeing him at age 80 reprise that role, there is something delightful about that. And, you know, so I guess it's a nostalgia trip and it's sort of a sentimental send-off, because I think this is the last time he'll do it. You know, it definitely has its emotional compensations.
I'm going to ask the obvious question here before we get to de-aging and how Jeannie and I look at something like that. But these movies, maybe it's just because I'm old, but you get to a point where you say to yourself, these don't need another episode. These don't need
to
be
revived.
Exactly. You know, it's like superhero stuff. I mean, he's a superhero, obviously. Right? I mean,
yeah.
Is there any evidence, Anne, that they're going down the drain, that people don't want him anymore, or is there evidence to the contrary?
Well, it's going to be interesting to see what happens with this one, you know. Weirdly, a strange proof of concept that it can work was the Top Gun movie, which completely, as we all know, bowled me over too. I mean, I went in with elbows out and sharpened and like, oh, come on. And then it was like, you got me. You know, I mean, it's so much in the execution. But yes, to your point, I am sensing a little bit of fatigue. And certainly with that superhero genre, you know, in the comic book genre, there have been a lot of those movies have stumbled this year. The Ant-Man movie did not do well, understandably so, because it was dreadful. It took a really sweet little, you know, subchapter of that whole saga, which was just delightful. It was really the most family-friendly version, you know, of those movies, I thought. Sweet, light, Paul Rudd, so endearing. But they just CGI, you know, like, then it just turns into yet another kind of generic piece of CGI CRAP. The Flash totally tanked a couple of weeks ago. The only real movie that's done well that you could call a comic book movie is Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse, which is just this really inventive, gorgeous animated movie. So it suggests to me, you know, that just as Iron Man redefined the genre 15 years ago, and then, of course, what'd they do? They just kept trying to chase that tail, you know, like, let's make more Iron Man.
Yeah.
Right.
We need novels. You know, it needs reinvigorating, because it's pretty much played out, in my view.
Well, let's do the Harrison Ford thing. I mean, Harrison Ford is very important to cinema in the United States of America over a long period of time. I mean, going all the way back to what's the movie?
American Graffiti?
Yeah, American Graffiti. Yeah, I mean, he's in that.
Yeah.
And that's a long time ago. Because Ron Howard has directed 87 movies since then, and he was in that movie as well.
That's right.
So everybody wants to see Harrison Ford, and everybody feels good about Harrison Ford, but what's the deal with, what is de-aging? What does that mean? He's 80 years old. Let's understand that. He's 80 years old. He looks 80. God knows I look 90.
No, he looks great. He looks great.
Okay, but does he look 30 or 40?
No, but he looks great. Do you agree, Anne?
Agreed. And in this movie, it's interesting you should... So when I was in L.A. in January at a lunch, at the AFI Awards lunch, and I bumped into a guy, and if he's, if he's listening, I am blanking on his name, and I'm so sorry, because I think he's actually from Washington. Anyway, he's in this business. And, you know, we were talking about this technology and how rapidly it has iterated and gotten really sophisticated. And I don't want to tell tales out of school, but I got to see a little example of the work that he was doing that was astonishing. It was just a little test they had made on an iPhone with an actor who starts in front of the camera as the actor we see today, walks away, and as he's walking back, they de-age him by 30 years, right in real time. I mean, it was just absolutely stunning. So with Ford, I gather that they actually went back into old footage that the studio had of him doing Indy. And then, so it's not that uncanny valley thing at all. You know, it looks very organic. It's not creepy. And to their credit, they let him be old. Like, that's for, you know, it starts with this very protracted flashback during which he's in his 30s. And then the bulk of the movie, he's 80-year-old Harrison Ford. And they show him, you know, with his 80-year-old body, which is wonderful, you know. They don't try to pretty it up or get rid of the wrinkles or anything. So to the filmmaker's credit, like, they don't, you know, they don't... I thought they did it very tastefully. And it all, it fits the story. And again, the glory of the movie is present-day Harrison Ford.
Well, he's a great-looking guy. Nice. I mean, when he takes his shirt off in Working Girl, everybody goes nuts. I mean, he's a great-looking guy. He's going to look better than most of us.
But he doesn't. He takes his shirt off here, and he's a great-looking 80-year-old guy who looks like an 80-year-old guy. You know what I mean? It's like, yay, more power to you, Harrison Ford.
I guess, I mean, because I have this. I can't run. I can't move the way I used to. My body doesn't work. I mean...
I know.
These movies are chase movies. They are physical movies, right?
I know. No, wait till you see Tom Cruise in a couple of weeks. Then we'll talk.
Why?
Same. Well, he's doing...
Oh, a Mission Impossible?
He might be 20 years younger, but he's he's 60.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. Right.
And he's still bopping. And, like, yeah, it really is. It is phenomenal.
Harrison Ford was in this Apple production, Shrinking, where he played an 80-year-old psychiatrist who was starting to get Parkinson's.
Mm-hmm.
He's fabulous. He looks fabulous. His acting is fabulous. He didn't look like he'd lost a step, even though he was playing somebody with Parkinson's.
Everybody
That's
seems
incredible.
To like him,
I need to watch that.
Oh, it's great. You like it.
Everybody likes Harrison Ford. Right?
They do. And again, to go back to Top Gun and Tom Cruise, you know, one of the reasons everybody made such a big deal about Top Gun was, here is that very rare global hit, mega hit, that isn't comic book and isn't superhero. It does feature real people doing stuff.
Well, I would also say that on Top Gun, that was only the second one. I mean, this is like the 14th Indiana Jones, right? Star Wars, aren't we up to about 30 on Star Wars made by independent producers at some point, right?
Too many.
I know. It's just, and that's, I guess that's where, it's been a while since we saw the last Indiana Jones. So, okay. You know what I mean? It doesn't feel like it's just wallpaper. But And I think the Top Gun sequel was a multi-generational hit. You know, it was the kind of thing you could bring your kids and grandkids to. This is, I think, going for that exact same, you know, it's like, let's see if that younger generation will come out to see this, you know, because like you said, it's just that same chase movie, the dingus. It's funny. It's like there is a bright red thread between the Fast and Furious and this and Mission Impossible. It's like, you know, they're all looking for the dingus, you know, that's going to save the, you know, so, but about Harrison Ford, like, let's see, like, let's, you know, we all love him and feel that same way about him.
But what if you're 25? What if you're 30 and you're seeing this old guy on, and you're just going to get rid of this old guy?
True, but those are also young people who grew up with him, watching him with their parents, because their parents are like, "Oh my God, you've got to see this Indiana Jones movie."
Yeah,
you know.
So they're all good.
Interesting about stardom right now is like, what is transgenerational? You know, we're finding out.
I mean, the box office probably tells you down the road.
Probably. Well, I was thinking about the song that played in More Cowbell, and I thought, how much longer does that expression have currency?
Oh, right.
I mean, it might be getting a little old.
I would think. I mean, you don't know. I'm getting
it's
a little
old. I mean,
You know, I have a proprietary interest in things like Star Wars. I mean, I saw the first one and the second one and the third one, and the fact that there's 15 of them, I don't even know who the people are anymore. I mean,
are you still watching them?
No, but I mean, I watched them. I mean, it's sort of a badge of honor that you were there on the first
one. You stood in line.
Yeah.
But like you, I agree. And it was, I guess it wasn't as big a part of my life at the time. You know, I guess it should have been. I remember going, it just didn't rock my world the way it rocks so many people's world. But I don't feel the need. I guess it's this, I'm perfectly happy to leave things in the, this is why I'm not on Facebook, right? It's sort of like, I'm okay. You know, I'm okay with leaving things in the past.
Right.
As a great memory, you know, like you don't need to keep doing it for me, you know, like I will keep moving and growing and changing. And so this need to just constantly go back. Although another thing, so in addition to Shrinking, which I will watch, I really need to watch Andor, because I've heard nothing but amazing things about this.
Oh, yes.
The television series. Of course, done by the great Tony Gilroy, who did the great Michael Clayton, my favorite movie.
Oh, yeah.
So, 2000s. And so all the reports are that, you know, that is just a really outstanding piece of work, piece of visual storytelling, which I would like to see. But yeah, I don't know. It's this kind of inability to move on, you know?
I've really got to retire. I can't keep doing this. Thank you, Ann.
Thank you, Mom.
Thank you, Ann. Ann Hornaday, boys and girls.
Happy note. Have a great weekend, everybody.
We'll take a break. We will have email and jingle when we return. I'm Tony Kornheiser.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
This is the Tony Kornheiser Show.
Here comes Tony.
Love that band, Eric DeLong and the Slappy Boys.
Brilliant
I love
band.
The notion of the Slappy Boys. Just love that. Bethesda Bagel ad for us?
Yes, Bethesda Bagels. We love them. You will as well. Just go to BethesdaBagels.com for the location in the DC area nearest you. Then pop on in and you will be thrilled.
All right, before we get to the mailbag, let me just say there's a song from me and Gene. I'm getting bugged driving up and down the same old strip. I got to find a new place where the kids are hip. My buddies and me are getting real well known. Yeah, the bad guys know us and they leave us alone. This is I Get Around.
Yes.
This was, at one point, the best-selling single the Beach Boys ever did, I Get Around.
1963?
Maybe, or even 62.
I will check
this
that
out. Yeah. This is Mike Love in the lead. This is Brian Wilson. Brian Wilson's genius is different than Paul Simon's. It's different than Bob Dylan's. Brian Wilson's genius is taking his everyday life and translating it into your everyday life. Brian Wilson always, you know, those other guys look outward, and Brian Wilson just said, you know what? I'm the star of this movie, and this is my life in my room. I mean, everybody could relate. Everybody of a certain age could relate
to that.
I'm
not looking outward because I haven't left this room in 10 years.
Yeah, well, yeah, he doesn't leave.
Right.
May 11th, 1964, with the B-side of Don't Worry Baby.
Which is the greatest.
No, the greatest Beach Boys. A little record, yeah.
You know, none of the guys go steady because it wouldn't be right to leave your best girl home on a Saturday night, right? Thanks to our guests today, Barry's Verluca and Ann Hornaday. Thanks to our sponsors today, Harry's Razors and Simply Safe. Remember, you can listen to us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play, and Odyssey. If you get the show through Apple Podcasts, please leave us a review. This is from Jim in Lutherville, and I guess I was looking for directions to Spooky Nook, or Wilbon was looking for directions to Spooky Nook, and he just says, whatever road you are on, head north. Look for the Slauson Cutoff. But the Slauson Cutoff was that thing that Johnny Carson always said, right, when he gave directions. Take it. Take the next ride after Magoobie's Joke House. Follow signs to Spooky Nook. If you see a Royal Farms, you missed it.
That checks out.
From Brandon Borselli, who we love.
We do love Brandon.
Lebanon, New Jersey. Yes. I can concur with Wilbon. My daughter plays AAU basketball, and Spooky Nook is the mecca of basketball. You get fat, bad sleep. You go deaf from the 80, yes, 80 basketball courts going constantly for 12 hours over 3 days. The worst part is there are basically no seats. Parents stand around like they're waiting for a subway to come by and pick them up. Because my kid thinks it's the greatest event ever and gets T-shirts, sweatshirts, pants, jackets, and all kinds of apparel to commemorate the trip. I'd rather go to a flea market and look for the deal of the century on a lamp. From Greg Wells, Dr. Comcast, and Why I'm Missing Pennsylvania. Listening to the Monday podcast, and Wilbon drops Spooky Nook into the conversation. And I thought, well, I know that place. As he describes, Spooky Nook is a ridiculous facility with soccer, basketball, field hockey, and lacrosse all being played in a huge complex. Mike made it sound like it was a town in Pennsylvania. It's actually in Mannheim, right outside Lancaster. Tell Mike he doesn't have to eat the swill served on site. There are plenty of good restaurants close by. I recommend John J. Jeffries or Gibraltar, both in Lancaster and both less than 15 minutes away. Food is excellent. Perhaps more importantly, after a day of watching basketball, the bars are well stocked. It sounds like it's difficult for parents to go there. From Josh Cromwell in Moselle, Mississippi. I love that the show has basically turned into a Martha Stewart type program. First, it begins with a thrilling new recipe for the fresh zucchini right out of the garden. And next up is Michael Wilbon to talk about all the hot travel spots this summer. The only thing missing was you should have had Remnick there to discuss the latest summer fashions. Do you want to talk about your new zucchini?
I harvested the ugly zucchini.
It's beautiful.
Yes.
You're going to make that. That's very good. Mm. From Josh in Normal, Illinois. Normal, Illinois, the hometown of?
I'm unaware.
David Kindred.
Oh, really? Oh.
David Kindred. And that's also where Rivians are made.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, the Rivian cars, yes.
Your knowledge of states and cities and people from them.
There's notable residents.
Well,
I mean,
strange.
You got to remember Kindred. I mean, you got to remember that.
Best holiday card ever.
A whole aside about a delicious zucchini instead of his grandson's birthday, and no one thought to call it a great zucchini? What are we doing
yes,
here, man?
I'm the great zucchini.
From Kevin Disher in Bay City, Michigan. At the end of Monday's show, you read an email describing an unfortunate fish that was mutilated by sharks and rendered useless in the eyes that judge it. Let's see. A boat goes out too far past what's safe. Fishermen and fish suffer for hours. Sharks destroy the noble fish and steal the financial gains of the fishers. No Santiago? No, a man can be destroyed but not defeated? No old man in the sea illusion at all? Somewhere Hemingway is questioning your English degrees. And that was sent to you as well as to me, so we know. John Juback in Pittsburgh. Although I'm a Pittsburgh Pirates fan, I've come to share your contempt for Dominic Smith. Yes! On April 29th, the Pirates were completing a doubleheader sweep of the Nats that would push their record to a league-best 20-8. They were leading the nightcap 16-0 in the bottom of the ninth when Dominic Smith hit the most meaningless home run of all time to make the final score 16-1. Since that moment, the Pirates have posted a record of 15 wins and 34 losses. They forgot how to hit, frequently staring at called third strikes like little leaguers. They make stupid outs on the base paths. The middle relievers have been beset by injuries and ineffectiveness. Even the design of their City Connect uniforms has been largely panned. I like those, the bright yellow ones. I thought they were really nice.
Yeah, they look cool.
Pirate fans blame ownership for being cheap, the front office for standing pat, and the hitting coach for being incompetent. But I know the real reason for their plunge in the standings. It's the curse of Dominic Smith. From Dan in Myrtle Beach. I was listening to you and Wilbon talk about his son's European AAU trip on Monday, and I couldn't help but notice your comment about Europe having more culture than Myrtle Beach. Excuse me? You think that Europe has more culture than Myrtle Beach? How many Waffle Houses can you find in Europe? We got six here. I've included a brief list below of some of the cultural highlights you could find on a trip to Myrtle Beach. I think we can both agree that any of these are better than some dumb Leaning Tower, Ripley's Believe It or Not Museum, the Hollywood Wax Museum, the Simpsons 4D Theater Experience, Broadway at the Beach, the Alabama Theater, Dolly Parton's Pirate Voyage, Myrtle Beach Skywheel, over 50 mini golf courses.
Well, there you
Take
go.
That, Europe.
Yes.
Oh, this is great. I'm putting Tony in very high company when I use the term revered and loved. In golf parlance in our day, Jack was revered, Arnie was loved. Regards, DG.
DG.
Of course, DG. From Scott Lady? Lighty? Scott from Elon. I went to Harris Teeter on Sunday specifically to purchase hair gel, asked Michael. And as any good little does, found myself wandering down the ice cream aisle looking at the price of Tillamook ice cream, $7.79. Right next to it was Breyers for $5.48, and then I found the jackpot Turkey Hill on sale for $2.99. I picked up a half gallon of coffee ice cream for you. You're welcome. Also tell Michael that Chef Sasha Felixson is no longer at Foxtrot and has since moved to Los Angeles. He'll be happy to provide all of your culinary needs on the West Coast. Are you familiar with
this? I'm very interested in this. And if you're at Harris
Teeter... Do
you
know Teeter, my chef?
By name, but not personally. Okay. If you're at Harris Teeter, check out the Stubbs Black Pepper Anytime Marinade and Sauce.
It's really good.
Very good.
All right.
Perfect on pork.
From Jay and Burke.
Skirt steak.
Always great hearing Wilbon check in on Mondays. Just curious, how many more inches does a son need to grow before you start calling him Wilbon Yama? That's funny. Claire sent a message. On behalf of the grateful Littles from out of town visiting this weekend, or last weekend, please give big dap to fellow little Heather Garcia of Wisconsin. She negotiated a deal at Hotel Zena or Zena. Do you know that? I don't know it.
It's down on 14th Street,
I think. Logan Circle for us that rivaled any fistful of coupons you'd use to make it rain at a Bass Store shoe outlet. Hotel Zena was a two-bathroom situation, as you can see in this attached photo of the gang. Everybody's wearing bathrobes.
Yes.
Oh.
All the Littles wearing bathrobes. So that's very, very nice. And one more. Robert from Denver. Before I started listening to this show, I did not know who Sally Jenkins was. And still, while I learned of her credentials on your show, she was merely a charming personality and smart person I listened to from time to time. When she came on to talk about her book, however, I was hooked. What a great thesis. Turns out she lives up to the hype. Holy cow. I went through that book in a day and a half and immediately thought, what else has she written? Well, a couple of days later, I'm almost done with Sum It Up, a book she wrote with legendary basketball coach Pat Summitt. At this pace, I'll get through the Sally Jenkins library pretty quickly. So when we put people on, and we put Sally on, and we put Remnick on. Go buy their books.
Yes, go buy their books.
And they know what they're doing.
Yes.
If you're out on your bike tonight, as always, do wear white.
Who is Tony?
Tony Kornheiser.
Who is that?
It's a PTI guy on ESPN.
Okay.
Broken energy, I find it.
Well, you can do it.